Unmute everybody.
Good afternoon, Venkat.
Good afternoon, can you hear us?
Yes, we can. We can hear and see you. And good afternoon, Pooja.
Good afternoon, Deshni. Good afternoon, everyone.
So, Venkat, I'm just waiting for Shreya, but we can get started because I understand we do have another 14 odd analysts online as well. So, without going into too much of details, because I do know that you are time pressed and we can always continue the discussion after that, I thought, Venkat, very, very quickly, I can just get each of the analysts to and the investor to introduce themselves, but literally for a couple of seconds and then in the room, and then we'll get started.
Perfect.
All right. So let's start off with you, Simon.
Simon Kendall. Simon, good to see you.
Start up someone you knew.
Correct. Good to see you.
All right. And then?
I'm Anupam from IIFL Securities.
Anupam. Yeah.
Good to meet you.
I'm Dayanand Mittal from SBI Cap Securities.
Excellent.
Lalit from ICICI Prudential.
Hi, Lalit.
Yeah, it's Abhijit from ICICI Securities.
Hi, Abhijit.
It's Pratik from Credit Suisse.
Hi.
Hi, this is Parag from UTI Mutual Fund.
Hi, Parag.
Hi, Venkat. This is Rajesh from HSBC Security.
Hi, Rajesh.
Rajesh.
Hi, Pinak from JP Morgan.
Hi, Pinak.
Bruce.
Hi, Venkat. Bruce Williams, Integral Asset Management.
Hi, Bruce.
Hi. Investor Bank South Africa.
Good to meet you.
Yeah.
And you've got Alex Ross from JP Morgan.
Hi.
Alex, yeah, Alex from JP Morgan.
Hi, Alex.
So, excellent. So, everyone, in terms of format for this afternoon's presentation and Q&A, I'm going to let Venkat start. He's got a group overview section. I'll then take over and take you through. I want to start up with the safety contact, but because Venkat is time constrained, I'll wait for that. And then we'll, amongst ourselves, divide the presentation. We would like you to hold your Q&As to the end, if possible. And I think after the visit, though, I'm hoping that many of those cues have been answered.
Yes.
All right. So, Venkat.
Oh, this is brilliant. This is brilliant. I'm able to see all of you. It's now sharing content. Okay. I prefer the other one, but that's okay. This is good. So, Deshni, I presume the visit has started, was in the morning, right? Or is it now?
No. We've already done the visit, Venkat. So
excellent.
We've done the mine and the plant visit. We've just had a really scrumptious luncheon. I can't wait for you to come back to Humsburg because mine lunches are not like what you and I remember it as.
Oh, right. Okay. No, I'm sure. It was an enjoyable visit actually for everyone. And firstly, apologies that I can't be there in person. I would have loved to be there in South Africa at the drop of a hat. But unfortunately, in a schedule constraints here, we are in London, which is actually raining at the moment. Actually, it's quite bad weather here today. So what I want to do is, in the time available, give a quick overview of the group. Most of you know it, but just to go over some of the old ground and also cover some of the other sectors within the business, like aluminium, oil and gas, etc. And then I'll hand the microphone over to Deshni to cover all the essential stuff in terms of Humsburg, which is primarily the purpose of your visit here. So firstly, if I can start with the slide number 5, if I may, and there are some additional slides which we have put in. And as you would have seen, we have started to ramp up communication with the investors. Dave would have given you copies of the investor briefs, which actually went out. There's a third one which has gone out today, where we thought it's good if we can keep the investors and shareholders, analysts, etc., updated on quite a real-time basis in terms of some of the milestones which we are meeting in the company rather than waiting for the quarterly results. And it also gives you that in a business such as ours, which ranges from zinc, lead, silver on one hand, oil and gas, aluminium and bauxite, then iron ore, then copper, then in terms of steel, and also in terms of power, there's something happening all the time in the business in that regard. So it's quite a widespread enterprise, and even the smallest part of our business is quite enormous. To give you an example, power business generates about 10,000 megawatts. If my calculations are right, that's about close to 20 or 25%, Simon, of ESCOM's generation capacity, correct, roughly?
Yeah.
In terms of the power generation. So, you know, it's a fairly formidable enterprise here. And if I can just start off with slide number five, and really the entire strategy of the group is built on some of these four areas which we have outlined. Let's start with the one at the bottom. And the reason why it's at the bottom is specific, because that's the foundation of the group in terms of our ESG credentials and our social license to operate. We are very strong in terms of a belief that we need to have a very strong social license to operate to maintain sustainability and continuity of our operations. And the pillars there are obviously safety and health, then environment, then in terms of community. And also the communities need to be better off for us having been there. And there are pictures which are there on our website which shows some of the operations as to what they were before Vedanta came there and what they look like currently. And you can see how towns and effectively mini cities have evolved around the respective operations. On safety, certainly the tone from top is very clear that we are towards zero harm. We would tolerate no fatalities. And touchwood, in the last 4 months, I'm pleased to report that Vedanta Limited has not had a fatality, and we are fatality free. And that's across all of our 54 business units. Then in terms of environment again, strongly believe in zero harm, zero discharge, and zero wastage. And a number of our projects and business site subscribe to this. And where there are gaps in this, we are actually addressing them forthwith. And certainly in terms of communities, and having visited some of the sites out at in India and also in terms of Zambia, the feedback which we have received in terms of communities and what they get out of our CSR programs, and the giving happens at multiple levels. One at the operational level, and at the country level, and even at the promoter level in terms of monies which are being pledged for the betterment of women and children. So a strong recognition coming out in that regard. What has become clearer, having been in the seat for the last 7 or 8 months, is there's a lot of good stuff which is happening within the company that doesn't get airtime. And that is something which we have changed and we have started to push through. And we have generated fact sheets with Deshni's help as well, in terms of areas like environment, community, safety, our CSR program, Tutukurin, and in terms of gender diversity, and also in respect of tailings management. And we have started to get those fact sheets that are about 3 or 4 pages, easy to read, and it gives you a flavor as to what we are doing, and it gives you some live examples in terms of case studies. And my colleague Pooja from our IR and PR team will tell you how you can access that, Pooja.
Sure. So, you know, if you go to Vedanta Limited, our group website, and if you scroll down to the investor section, you will find a link called Interactive Fact Sheets. When you click on that, you will be directed towards a microsite, which will give you a comprehensive yet very focused information on what we are doing on these parameters. Yeah.
So just to give you an example, like Pooja, we have number of people who are young, energetic, and a lot of passion actually wanting to drive. So people like me get a lot of energy and inspiration from youngsters within the team at Vedanta. Then the last area in terms of the whole ESG is in terms of governance and ethics, zero tolerance in terms of ethics violation. We have got a strong review mechanism that takes place in terms of any ethical violations. There's an ethics committee in place, and likewise, very keen in terms of ensuring proper corporate governance. And I'm sure Deshni will touch upon our 7 pillars when she actually covers it in her presentation. Second area is, if you look at the population of the world, certainly Indian subcontinent accounts for about 2 billion people, and this is the broader subcontinent, and Africa is also going to get to around that level here. So certainly we are best poised in terms of participation in the long-term prospects offered by the Indian subcontinent and Africa, and we are perfectly positioned in these two continents to effectively grow in the commodities where we currently have a strong foothold. That's the second building block in that regard. Ultimately, the business is around your people and your assets. So significant amount of effort goes into having the right management in place, ensuring that people's talent are daylighted. They are giving opportunities in terms of actually getting the best out of them by rotating between assignments. And as you can see, people you would have met today on the shop floor and on the plant would have actually gone through various training grounds within the wider Vedanta group. And here the focus when it turns to the assets is having tier one assets. So effectively a dominant position in the market. And certainly assets tend to have very long life and low cost. And importantly, very good brownfields expansion potential. And I'll come on to that in a second. And obviously our North Star is to become a major global diversified resources company, but with a strong purpose. And the strong purpose is to give back to the country and the continent where we actually operate. Now, with that introductory comment, turning to slide six, if you look at the Indian subcontinent, if I were to start with that, we have in India around 1.3 billion people. The subcontinent, as I said, is around 2 billion people. It's one of the fastest growing regions in the world. And I, having come from India back in 1988, and when I travel back to India every year, I see, I'm amazed at the growth which actually India has seen. And there are various metrics you can look at. And certainly it's one of the fastest growing regions in the world. And it's perhaps the most stable democracy. It's the largest democracy in the world and the most stable democracy in the world. And as they say, they can take, you can take the boy out of India, but you can't take India out of the boy. So with regard to IPL, with regard to any test match, there's no surprise in terms of which team one does support. So in that regard, very passionate about certainly what the country has to offer. There is significant mineral resource potential within India. It's hardly been scratched at the surface. And India, if it's allowed properly, can be completely self-sufficient in terms of its mineral wealth. And it can eliminate any deficit in trade which is caused by the import of minerals. And that includes minerals which are industrial in nature, base metals, and potentially even precious metals. What is encouraging for us is that the new national mineral policy has got a vision of growing the mineral production of the country by 200% over the next 7 years, which is quite ambitious. So it's effectively tripling the current level of mineral production over 7 years, and they plan to reduce the trade deficit by around 50% over the same period. That presents us as with a very good opportunity. We are best positioned as one of the largest diversified companies in India and the largest resource company to basically get the foothold in India and participate in the opportunities that India has to offer. And in that regard, we are working very closely with Niti Aayog. And for Simon's benefit, Niti Aayog is basically the policy formulation unit, which reports directly into the Prime Minister of India. And as you can see, some of the metrics out there in terms of what is happening in terms of the economy, the ambition here is to become a $5 or $6 trillion economy here. The per capita income to more than double, and obviously the impact of urbanization to go up to 40%. And obviously what you can see population growth in 2030 is to get to around 1.5 billion people. So we are also positioned in those commodities, as you can see on the right hand side, which are forecast to grow significantly as compared to what the world averages, whether it's zinc, whether it's copper, whether it's iron ore, whether it's oil or it's steel, we've got a presence there. And at the bottom of the slide, you can see what India's mineral reserves ranking is globally. And this has not been scratched in full. And as you know from your experience in exploration, when you start exploring, the reserves tend to keep coming. They tend to get added here. And as one says, anything we have either comes from above the ground, which is in the form of agriculture, or has to come from below the ground. There's no other option in that regard. And India does have very good potential in terms of offering the engine of growth for the country over the next 20, 30 years and beyond. The same can be said about Africa, slide number seven. And with regard to Africa, again, if you look at some of the statistics here, going to potentially a $3 trillion economy in Africa. And my estimate, having lived in South Africa for over 14 years, is that that number is probably understating it. It's going to be much higher than that. And certainly the expansion programs we see in some of the key cities in Africa are second to none, and the urbanization rate is going to be much stronger than what we see in terms of that particular slide. But certainly over the next sort of 12 to 13 years, you're going to have 40% of the world's population living in the Indian subcontinent and the African continent. And that's not areas that you can ignore if you're in the natural space, natural resources space. Now, looking at our various commodities here, and here, if you can pardon me, I'm going to sort of dip in and out of our quarterly presentations as well. And Dave would have given you copies of some of our slides in which we tabled at our quarterly presentation in terms of aluminium and in terms of oil and gas. So we'll come to oil and gas and aluminium in a second. As I said, in terms of power generation, we have 10,000 megawatts of power which we generate. One third of it is towards IPP, which is our TSPL plant, and two thirds in respect of captive power supply, which helps our mines. And we are investing significantly in renewable power, close to about 400, 500 megawatts. The success story here in some of our smaller businesses has been Electrosteel. We acquired the business during the course of last year. It has been a spectacular turnaround. The run rate currently is going at about 1.5 million tons per annum. And a year on year, that the run rate has actually gone up 17%. Bear in mind, we acquired the business only in the middle of the year. But certainly exit run rate show around 1.5 million tons per annum. That can expand to around 2.5 million tons per annum at the cost of around $300 million, give or take. What we have been able to achieve is an EBITDA improvement by doubling it from around roughly $60 per ton to close to around $130 to $140 a ton. And that has come as a result of volume improvements, cost reductions, and efficiency improvements largely. So this is quite a good acquisition, something which we are proud of. Generally, our growth tends to be from effectively brownfields expansions and exploration, etc. This is something which we have acquired recently, and the payoff has been quite good. Now, if I can then turn to our aluminium business, and here Dave would have given you a copy of slide number 16 from our quarterly presentation. Dave, I take it the analysts do have that?
Everybody's got it.
Brilliant. I think the key messages for us here is what structural changes we are driving towards in aluminium business. And I know when I went on my first roadshow, everybody was telling me, you're sounding like all the preceding CEOs here. You're talking about $1,500 per ton cost and aluminium, you know, driving towards structural changes. We have heard this story for 5 years. And my response at that stage is, we will show it to you by numbers. So as you can see here, we have been very good progress, which has actually been achieved in the last 6 months in this particular area. And just to put it in context, we account for 45% of the Indian aluminium market. That's our market share. Now, with regard to achieving this $1,500 a ton, our route map was, firstly, we were short bauxite. We had to go long bauxite. So in that regard, the mine owned by OMC, we have actually managed to ramp up production from that mine. It's currently delivering between 250 to 300 KT a month. That gives us a run rate of 2.5 to 3 million tons of bauxite going into Lanjiga. So that effectively comes at a much lower cost than what you would have to import alumina at. So that has actually helped us in a big way in terms of actually ensuring a feed of bauxite. And we really need close to around 6 million tons of bauxite to ensure that our Lanjiga refinery can produce 2 million tons of alumina without any requirement to import bauxite or to buy in bauxite. But currently, we're confident we'd be able to secure 2.5 to 3 million tons of bauxite from the OMC mine, and we are securing additional sources. So that's the first area where we've been able to achieve a structural reduction in costs. The second area is obviously our Lanjiga refinery. The expansion has actually gone well. The run rate currently corresponds to around 1.8 to 2 million tons per annum of alumina, which is coming from Lanjiga. And our intention here is to take that to around 2.6 to 2.7 million tons in the first stage of the modular expansion. Now, that together with around 2 million tons of alumina import certainly helps us to provide the feed which is needed to generate our 2 million tons of aluminium. So there has been very good bauxite feed coming through. The drop in alumina prices has helped. And you would have seen the recent court judgment where we can participate in the NALCO tenders also will help us in that regard. And all of this has helped us pull the structural cost down on one end. At the same time, the second area is coal. And with regard to coal, it's the availability, it's your stock, and the price at which you're getting it. If I can give you a couple of data points, we are currently sitting at around 11 to 12 days coal stock outside our respective sites, which is 12 days more than what we used to have. So that's been a very comfortable position to be in. In addition to that, the prices of coal obviously have dropped in the last sort of quarter, and we have managed to get additional linkages come through even in respect of tranche four of the auction. And as the mineral space opens up, natural resources space opens up, we will start to get more of the coal feed coming through in respect of pulling our structural costs down. And a couple of data points again here. Our cost as at February 18, cost of production was $1,740 a ton in terms of aluminium. And the exit rate at the end of last year, which is last week, has fallen to around $1,700 a ton. So if you had asked me, when we reported $2,200 a ton, whether you'd get to around $1,700 a ton today, I would have said probably not, but we have actually achieved there. And as you know, this has been achieved as a result of all of these factors. In addition to that, we are increasing our value-added percentage, looking at around 60%, so that we get better premium in terms of our products here. And our intention here is to ramp that up to around 70%. So aluminium has been a very good success story. One accepts that the raw material sector can be volatile, so we may need to give up some of this temporarily and then have to claw back, but certainly the direction is towards driving it to $1,500 a ton as we increase the volume in terms of aluminium. Now, turning on to oil and gas here, with regard to oil and gas portfolio, and if you can refer to slide 17 primarily from our quarterly presentation here, many people may not know, we are the largest private producer of oil and gas in the country in India. The vision obviously is to produce 500,000 barrels of oil and gas per day and doubling it using the recent concessions, 41 blocks which we have run, which we have secured under OLAP. And this is over time, by the way, it's not something that's going to happen overnight or over the next couple of years. Our current production is around 200,000 barrels. Give or take, round it up, and of which 20% comes from offshore, 20% is gas, and 60% comes from our Rajasthan fields, MBA, Mangala, Bhagyam, and Aishwarya. Our ultimate North Star vision is to ensure that we produce 50% of India's crude oil and gas consumption. That's where we want to be as a company. Now, our roadmap to achieving that, if you can see on slide number 17, it's fairly simple. Obviously, trying to get more out of our existing wells in terms of our infill program that is ongoing, and also to ramp up our liquid handling capacity upgrades, they are actually happening in that regard. That is to get more out of our existing production machine. Then the next area is around development. How do you get the step changes in volume coming through? And in that regard, it's improving recoveries. And as you know, the polymer flood program at Mangala has been extremely successful. We are planning to replicate that in the fields of Bhagyam and Aishwarya. And at the same time, we have tested the ASP flood, which has got very good results on a pilot basis in some of our fields. And that is something we want to roll out in terms of all three fields, Mangala, Bhagyam, and Aishwarya. And that has been factored in terms of our gross capex spend over the next sort of 1 to 3 years. At the same time, bringing on additional tight oil and tight gas basically comprises of our development spend. That will give us the step change in terms of the oil and gas production. These do take time to come on stream. So over the next sort of 12 to 24 months, you will start to see this coming on stream. Some of these will start to get hooked in at the end of March going into April. We've had the gas bridge starting to hook in from the end of March going into April in that regard. Then the next area, obviously, is around appraisal, looking at where we can get additional oil and gas in terms of our existing fields in Rajasthan. And the big step change, obviously, is trying new finds. How do we find a new Mangala, a new Bhagyam, new Aishwarya? And there are a number of prospects which we have located in that district. And as you would have seen, recently we announced an oil discovery, a gas discovery first, in terms of the KG fields. And very recently, we announced an oil discovery as well in terms of the KG fields. These are initial discoveries. These need to be then converted, and additional drilling will need to be done. But we are certainly excited by the prospects in here. So the trick is, as you find oil and gas, is to drill more in those areas because it's highly prospective, and those are the ones which are likely to give you a better results. And also to get into place an exploration program with the help of service providers and partners on the 41 blocks which have come through, which cover around 55,000 square kilometers roughly. And that's over a 3 to 6 year program, which is what we are looking at. And that will give the future, effectively giving us the ability to create another MBA field. Having spoken to a number of industry players here, they are absolutely positive about the potential oil in India has to offer, particularly the Rajasthan fields, the MBA fields, and we have consulted with ex-operators from some of the large oil companies, and they have said these fields are very similar and even better to what you can get in the United States. So in that regard, certainly this is a business which is going to go fast and certainly add potential to the group. Now, having covered briefly oil and gas and aluminium, electro steel, with regard to iron ore, I think we have covered it enough in our existing calls, but I'm cautiously optimistic that mining will resume in Goa, certainly given the messaging we have received in terms of the state government and also the central government. We have to work through the process, so certainly cautiously optimistic in that regard. And with regard to copper in India, that process is going through the state courts. But certainly you've seen the results of the findings of the NGT tribunal and also of that of the Supreme Court. We have just got to go through the state court process in that regard. So having covered those aspects of the business here, and all of which effectively are growing businesses, if I can then come on to the primary reason for your visit to Harmsburg, which is around zinc. And if I can turn to slide number 9, there are 3 broad key messages which I would like you to take away from these slides. Firstly, we are the largest zinc producer in the world when you add Hindustan Zinc and Zinc International at its full potential. It could get to around 2 million tons per annum to around 2.2 million tons per annum on a fully expanded basis. We currently account for about 10 to 12% of the total zinc market, and we are growing, and this is both primary and secondary. Importantly, we have the lowest cost in the cost curve, and we have got the longest life in terms of our assets and very good exploration potential in between the areas where we operate. So if the messages here are obviously the largest producer, a market dominant position, have the lowest cost, tends to have the longest life and best exploration potential. And unfortunately, we couldn't show this as a three-dimensional figure here. If you were to look at the top zinc producers by 2022 and the cost curve, and you add to it life, you can see what business we have in our portfolio here. And even that is not fully valued, as I would come on to in a second. So that's in terms of the first key message in terms of what Hindustan Zinc and Zinc International collectively would look like. And I think that's how we should start to look at the business here, rather than Hindustan Zinc and Zinc International. Look at it together as to what it can offer. And I'm sure Deshni is going to open up and show what the reserve potential and the resource potential at Harmsburg is through various stages. So I'm not going to steal her thunder. Secondly, VZI, as Deshni would elaborate, over time could be a 600,000 tons per annum producer over time. And certainly in the medium term, it could be between 400 to 500. So that's, you know, after taking into account even Black Mountain, et cetera. And the costs are going to be below, say, $1,000 a ton. Now, that is roughly 60% of what Hindustan Zinc currently produces, give or take. And that is not factored in terms of any of our valuation. If you look at where Hindustan Zinc is trading at, VZI gets lost in the translation in that regard. So that's a second message I'd like you to take home with you in terms of what Zinc International could be to the value equation in the business. The third message we don't highlight anywhere is silver. For 2019, we're going to produce close to 700 tons of silver. And according to my calculations, it's 24 million ounces of silver which we produce. And March 2019, as you would have seen from the investor update, we've got 81 tons which have actually come out. And on that basis, the run rate is going to be somewhere between 800 to 900 tons. And next year, we're targeting an increase from our current 700 tons to around 800 tons of silver production. And that's a revenue stream of around roughly $360 to $400 million, which we don't credit to cost of production, by the way, as how some of the other mining companies do. We show it separately. But that is not factored in as a silver business and doesn't get the multiple we need in terms of our share price. So the three key messages for us is the largest zinc producer with the lowest cost and the longest life and very good exploration potential. VZI is roughly 60% of Hindustan Zinc, but it gets lost in the translation. And silver production and the silver benefit is completely invisible in the scheme of things. But it's our job as management to daylight value from some of these, and we are working towards it. Now turning to Hindustan Zinc here. As you would have seen, Hindustan Zinc's track record of project delivery is second to none. Having transitioned not necessarily base metals, but gold mining business from open cast to underground, I've not come across an instance where we have actually been able to maintain flat production. When open cast mining, which contributed close to around 200 to 250 1,000 tons last year, effectively doesn't contribute this year, and underground has to ramp up. So we can see underground, which has delivered around 30 to 35% uptick as compared to last year, thereby trying to mitigate the loss of the open cast mines. And that's been a spectacular achievement by the Hindustan Zinc team. They've done exceptionally well. Now, in terms of the next stage as to where the uptick is going to come from, if you look at underground mining, the 3.75 million tons per annum SK shaft has been commissioned. The 3.75 million tons per annum Rampura Ahuja shaft is in progress of being commissioned. Then in terms of plants, we've got two plants at SK mine, which have been commissioned, each 1.5 million tons per annum. And then the 2 million tons per annum Zawar plant has also been commissioned. And the 1.5 million tons plant at RD mine is in progress. So certainly where we need to get additional mining capability, additional milling capability, that is actually tracking for our requirements here. Then needless to say, for underground mining, you need backfill. So the backfill plants at RA mine and SK mines have also been commissioned in that regard. So we are also working through debottlenecking of some of the mill plants, and certainly the SK mine and the Zawar mine mills have also been commissioned, as I said. So looking ahead, what we are targeting is next year, 1.2 million tons of MIC capacity for FY20. That's what we are targeting. And March, Hindustan Zinc finished at around 98,000 tons in terms of production in that regard. And we then want to take that up to around 1.35 million tons per annum and then to 1.5 million tons per annum. And the jump we can actually make to 1.35 without any increase in the smelter capacity. Silver production was around 700 tons for 2019. We are targeting, and this is an aim at this stage, to get to around 800 tons in FY20 in that regard. So certainly Hindustan Zinc is steady as she goes. You will start to see the growth projects coming to fruition here. A chunk of the capital expenditure has been spent and the mills are being commissioned. The underground infrastructure is being commissioned as we start to ramp up production in this area. And along with that comes the silver upside. Now, very quickly, if I can close touching upon the zinc market in general, I would say it because we produce zinc, but zinc market is certainly going through a cyclical shortage, and everyone was saying that zinc is actually going to give way. It's been holding very well for exactly that reason. Our view is that the refined market will continue to be tight because the capacity has been maxed out outside of China, and capacity has been restrained in China, and some of the projects here may not fully deliver what has been promised around in the world, especially those in terms of retreatment, etc. We're not seeing that many new projects come on stream, which is going to be a critical factor. So that will create a shortfall sort of 3 years down the line, which is where we want to be perfectly poised to get the benefit when that market, when the supply of that starts to fall, hence having these projects lined up to enable us to give us the material we need. And this is also compounded by the fact that some of the zinc mines in the world are approaching end of life. So you certainly need to have that project pipeline to cover that in that regard. So we are well positioned here to deliver around 2022 to 23, which is critical, and through a combination of Hindustan Zinc and Hamsberg. And the global refined stock, as that slide says, is at an 11-year low right now. And as you can see, the zinc price has been very resilient, and it's trading at $350 more than what our business plan assumptions were. So moving on to the next area is in terms of demand drivers. Needless to say, the major use of zinc is galvanizing. Here is an area where we have not spent enough time in terms of advocacy. And one of the areas we are actually channeling our efforts is to see how do we ensure that zinc is more abundantly used in steel structure. A, it's safer, and it enables the life of that asset to go longer. So using these two to build advocacy efforts, and we might start with ourselves by saying we're not going to use any steel in our establishments unless it's galvanized for a start. And we see that effectively pulling up zinc demand in a big way, and we'd expect support from the various governments where our mines are actually located. The demand is certainly driven by increased need for steel, and we can see that in automobiles, we can see it in railways, and we can see it in terms of steel production and also in terms of fertilizers. So a very strong demand pipeline coming to India. And one advantage of having a dominant presence in India is you're not reliant on an export market. That market can consume pretty much everything you throw at it, whether it's oil and gas, whether it's aluminium, whether it's even zinc in that regard. We believe that China, despite the speculation around the slowdown, will provide demand in terms of infrastructure, in terms of automobile and other uses as well, because that infrastructure needs are going to happen. It's not going to slow down, largely driven by the growth which we are seeing in the respective economies here, and certainly the policy of that of the respective governments. And we also see emerging markets sort of driving demand growth in that regard. And this is outside of the Indian subcontinent, outside of China, entering into some of the other emerging markets as well, where we see positive demand coming through for growth. And this is around Africa and parts of Latin America in that regard. So where does that leave us? Slide number 13. We're well positioned to cater to this market, both in terms of size, in terms of what growth we offer, and in terms of reliability, certainly in terms of reliability of delivering the quantity and the quality, and above all, mine life. I think the mine life part of it is critical. Also, location-wise, we are strategically located from where we are in South Africa and Namibia and where we are in terms of India. We can cater through Hindustan Zinc to the Indian subcontinent, to the Southeast market and the Middle East markets, and through VZI, we can cater to the European and African markets. So overall, I'm actually quite optimistic with regard to our zinc, lead, and silver potential. And also, as I had outlined earlier, in terms of what we have been able to achieve in aluminium, what we are looking at in terms of oil and gas. And I'm also cautiously optimistic that the operations which are in slumber right now, which is iron ore in Goa and Karnataka, Goa, and also the Tuticorin plant, will be reopened. But we will do that with full community support as far as Tuticorin is concerned. So those are my initial comments. I think I thought I'd sort of steal half an hour of Deshni's time to at least give you an overview in terms of the group at a very, very high level. And very happy at once Deshni finishes, if you want a session with me down the line, very happy. I'm at the end of the telephone. You can liaise with Sneha and we can hook up a time where we can actually have a chat. Very, very happy in that regard. Deshni, over to you.
Thank you, Beckett. Excellently summarized. As I said, we're not going to handle Q&A now, but I think most of the chat is something you can keep for another time and route it through by your stay. All right.
Okay. So you've got a charter flight to catch, right? Am I right?
Yes, we do. So we are on a very tight schedule.
Okay, I'll hang up.
Okay.
Thank
you so much, Venkat and Pooja, and we'll keep you posted as to how the rest of this conversation goes. Thank you.
And for everyone from India, I'm certainly planning to spend time after our results announcement for a few days in Mumbai visiting each of you. I'm sure Sneha will actually provide you details.
Yes. I'll give it
Simon, I'll come to Cape Town. That's a promise.
That's not fair. So Simon's got a better address.
Excellent. Very good. Thank you.
Thank you, Pooja.
Cheers.
So I have tough job of trying to get us back on time track. So I'm going to change it around slightly. I had intended to start off with the safety contact because it's the way we operate. So Dave, I'm going to ask you to do the safety contact in 2 minutes. Okay. I'm only going to play the corporate video at the end, time permitting, instead of using the time now. Okay. I think it'll be an excellent consolidation of what you saw and what you've just heard. I was planning to do it now. I'll do it at the end. Okay. But I think it's more important that we do the FaceTime now. Yeah. So over to you, Dave. Very quickly.
Okay. 2 minutes. I'll take less. First of all, thank you everyone for traveling here. So I'm very conscious that yesterday a lot of the room took 2 long flights and then another long flight this morning. And we're sitting down for another long period after a lovely big lunch. So of our value of care, you know, we're very focused here on employee wellness and people wellness. So just this evening, maybe take time to take a walk, take a stroll. When you get back to your hotel tonight, take the stairs, not the lift. Move the body a bit, get the heart moving and pumping. And eat a small bit less than lunch. I saw some people taking 2 or 3 plates, I'm sure.
Oh, no, Dave. Thank you, Dave.
So please, and you know, if you guys, I know there's 2 or 3 people taking flights tonight when you land back in India, wherever you're going to, you know, be conscious not to drive maybe and get picked up or Uber or something like that. Just don't drive after those long haul flights you've taken for 2 or 3 days, okay?
Okay, thank you, Dave. In the spirit of care, thank you, Dave. Let's go to slide 15. Okay, and I just promise you guys that I will try and make the previous one, the Zinc International. All right, so Zinc International is a collection of operations and projects that we bought from Anglo American in 2011. Okay, so this was the Scorpion operation in Namibia, which is in the southern tip of Namibia, just about 450 k's away from this location. That is an open pit mine and a refinery. It is actually one of the largest integrated zinc operation in Africa. Currently, we only have 1.5 years of life left. But as you would recall, you know, when we bought the asset, the life would have ended in 2014. So we've managed to do subsequent pushbacks, which has enabled us to increase the life of mine. The refinery has a capacity of 150,000 tons. Then we look at Black Mountain Mine. Black Mountain Mine is actually in JV with Exxaro, and we have a 6% employee, or the ESOP, the employee share option plan there. It's an underground operation, which Andre, Sean, and the team look after. That is a polymetallic ore body, so it comprises of zinc, lead, silver, and copper. Currently on the deep side, which is what we refer to the life of mine, we have 4 years of life of mine left. Andre and the team have done a great job in terms of, you know, every 3 years giving us another couple of years. So we've managed to extend the life, as miners do. I think, though, we do realize that that life does come to an end because it doesn't extend further at depth. And if time permits, we'd like to talk to you about the Swartberg deposit that we have, that we're currently mining, but we have expansion plans of both open pit and underground to replace and potentially expand the Black Mountain operation. In terms of plant capacity, you know, we can treat about 1.7 million tons of ore a year to produce around 75,000 tons of zinc equivalent metal in concentrate. Turning to Gamsberg, which is where we are today, and I think Satish would be happy to know that it's no longer a project, Satish. This is the operation. You know, we're all here because this operation, this deposit is actually one of the largest known undeveloped zinc deposits in the world today. What we've just executed is phase one. Thank you, Michael. I don't know why I need to see myself when I speak. Zoom out. Okay. One of the world's largest undeveloped zinc ore bodies. Phase one, which is the project that we've just executed, will treat 4 million tons of run-of-mine ore to produce at a capacity around 250,000 tons for design. That's design capacity. In terms of where we are in the ramp up phase, we do believe that we'll ramp up by the first half of this coming, or now, this financial year. The first shipment of on-spec zinc concentrate was made on the 26th of December. And Satish will talk to you a little bit about that. We have had a unique privilege, I think, on this mine, where we've had the President of the Republic inaugurate the operation. I would be remiss if I don't mention the Lafine operation that we also bought from Anglo American in 2011. That operation has since been successfully closed 2 years after we had originally intended. I think outside of, you know, really being had a lot of cash support towards the end of the life of the mine, the Lachine story is a very successful one in terms of how you can start a mine with a closure plan in sight, and how you then execute the closure plan concurrently and then after the life of mine, whereas we actually are months away from receiving a closure certificate there. Just in terms of the, you know, broad overview of the business, because I'm not going to go into too much detail in the subsequent slides, if you need, Dave. Safety as for us is a first value, and you probably see a lot of these banners around. It's something that we've just added to our values in the last month. We had 7 values up until now. That's around care, trust, as Dave mentioned, care. We've got respect, trust, integrity, which I always call the personal values. And then the business values, you know, quality, excellence, entrepreneurship, as well as innovation. So we added safety because I always think it's a journey that we've had to earn it. And by adding safety, it doesn't take anything away from safety, but it's not just something that we prioritize, it's the way we work. And that's why safety is so important to us. We do as a business subscribe to zero in terms of zero harm, zero waste, and zero discharge. Just some key points that the teams will then cover up. We have since acquisition, which I think has made us pretty unique. We've invested over $20 million to drill over 500,000 kilometers or 500 kilometers in exploration. And that has actually yielded quite an increase for us in both R&R, but it's also given us enough optionality for refinement on the project pipeline. We employ today just under 4,000 employees directly and indirectly, but while Satish was busy constructing the project, at peak, Kamsberg alone at over 3,000 people. We are currently headquartered in Johannesburg, but many of you that know the Vedanta operating model very well would know that it's a very lean operation, a very lean model there. We employ just under 30 people in Johannesburg. We also have a shared services team that sits there in terms of the AP and procurement. So that's who we are in a nutshell. And I've mentioned that much that I can be very quick on the rest of the slides so that, as I said, give back the time that Venkat took from us. Very good overview, because I really want Satish to speak about the project. So what I didn't mention on the previous slide is our vision. And our vision is one of, you know, to produce around 1 million tons of zinc equivalent, okay, in a very safe way. To do that, being very commercially smart, in that we want to be in the first quartile of the industry cost curve. But we want to enable that by being, you know, very digitally smart. We want to be an employer of choice in the region in which we operate in. And we want to be what I call a shining example of sustainable mining in the industry. You know, just touching very quickly on some, you know, on a few examples of that. The safety vision for us is zero. Okay, our immediate focus today is to make sure that we can eliminate fatalities, and that, as Andre very passionately talks about, making sure that we never affect negatively the quality of lives of both our employees as well as our community members. On the cost focus, you know, as much as we operate businesses that are on the later stage of their life cycles, which for me means, you know, extra haulage in Scorpion, many of you probably know this, but the average, you know, stripping ratio for us at Scorpion last year was 1 to 40, which is something that we don't normally do. So that is why, you know, whenever I get asked the question of where the cost sits, I always answer that we are as efficient as we can be given the life cycle phase that we are in. But what we definitely took the challenge on, and Satish and Pushpender would explain later, is that when we had the opportunity of setting up Kamsberg from scratch, we definitely went out to make sure that from a cost structure point of view, it was set up to be as efficient as possible. And that's really about making sure that more cost than in usual mining operations were kept variable. In terms of the very ambitious 1 million ton per annum, and I do call it fulfilling dreams. In terms of the ambitious 1 million ton per annum target, why the team and I are confident that we can deliver this, because it is in the ground. So that's where it starts off. If we manage to increase our R&R since acquisition, post depletion, and we are sitting on more land today than we had at the start in terms of prospecting rights, we're very confident that not only can we ramp up these kinds of levels, but we will be able to sustain this kind of production level for at least 20 years, but we'll speak about that. When I talk digital, and I just want to touch on this, the team again will speak about it. We talk about it in two ways. Retrofitting what we're currently doing. Many of you know Andre's got the underground shaft. One of the projects that we looked at there was implementing short interval control using our Sandvik technology with underground Wi-Fi and making sure that we can effectively manage the value chain underground. Again, we'll speak to you about that later. When I talk about starting new, many of you would have seen at the mine at Humsburg, we have what we call the Smart Ore Movement project. And that was digitizing and digitalizing what was traditional, very manual work around mining and planning systems so that we could have access to more online and real-time data to affect better decision-making. Again, we'll speak to you about that. But it's a way of life for me in terms of digital. And this is when we now have digitalized the way we recruit. You know, if any one of you are interested in joining us, there's actually an e-platform that you can visit. And interesting, I told you, Andre is going to leave us in a couple of weeks. The recruitment for Andre's replacement is actually done on an e-platform along social media. We still haven't found another Andre because he's irreplaceable, but we are looking. But the team has also done work like, you know, digitalizing Marcus, the core logging process for us. So there's examples across the value chain that we can pick on. Lastly, I just want to say, on employer of choice. Now, this is a very special region for all of us. And I think one that you can't spend, you know, less than a couple of months and not become quite taken by what this region has to offer. In the very small Kaima region, in the Namakwa, the greater Namakwa region, we only have around 12,000 community members. Over 50% of them are unemployed. So this is not only a region where, you know, we are one of the larger employers, but it's a region where what we are doing is really needed. That's what actually drives us. So whereas typically when, you know, expat companies come in and try to build a project, you would typically want to do this with outsourcing as much as you can from wherever you can do it. We made a very deliberate, and I have to now congratulate Satish and the team for executing against that, a conscious decision to recruit as many people locally as possible. And that is why this project was executed even at a 3,000 number, at least 60% of them being Northern Cape, and over 25 to 30% of the people being as local as Kaima. So by having done this project, we've actually upskilled, we've trained, we've actually skilled people that previously were not. And I think for us, that's actually really what drives us here. And when we talk about sustainability, I mentioned Lishin. I think the other point I want to make, so I don't make it on the next slide, is that Humsburg, and Satish probably pointed this out to you guys in the visit, is in one of 35 biodiversity hotspots globally. So there's quite a challenge, right? Many mining companies talk about relocating community members in order to build projects. We say we've had to relocate succulents in order to build a project. But what I like about the way we've gone about this from a sustainable mining point of view is that the biodiversity is completely integrated there today. When you talk to the mining team about their collision awareness systems in terms of CAS, they would actually point out to you from a geolocate point of view where all the biodiversity sensitivity areas are. So it was integrated in design, it was integrated during execution, and it is certainly integrated now during operation. Okay. So by talking as much then, I think I've saved us the next slide. Let's go to the next slide, Dave. So, I mean, these are the pillars. Venkat touched on it quite nicely in terms of why SSG is so core to this business. I've touched on safety as a value, and those are the pillars in which we basically execute our safety initiatives on. CSR, as I said, I can go into a lot of detail. I'm not, you know, just to say that, again, for the size of business we are, we have spent over 100 million rands in CSR in South Africa alone since acquisition. And you can imagine for a community of 14,000 people that money does go a very, very long way. One project I would like to touch on there is the community Wi-Fi. So we call it V-Fi because it's Vedantify. There was a good play on the Wi-Fi. But there's a, you know, Satish likes saying that was one of the cheaper projects that we implemented. But I think we can say categorically the project with the maximum impact. So we put two hotspots into each of the regions within this this area, and that, you know, on a community basis, every member in the community gets 500 megabytes per week. And that's extraordinary. For us, that's called digital empowerment. And that was one of the projects that we've actually, I'm not going to go into details on the broad base, but if you do have 5 minutes, Sean would love to talk about that some other time. But I think there, the point to make is that it's, you know, what we need to do as a company is to start supporting what we call beyond mining projects, right? So that it's not just mining that we leave behind, but that there is livelihood beyond. I touched on the biodiversity hotspot. I'm not going to go into it. It's a pity because it's something we all are incredibly passionate about. All you should know is that, as Venkat said, the objective of doing business is gone are the days where you expect to, at worst, leave it no worse off than you found it. Our objective is to make sure that we can leave behind a positive legacy beyond the mining that we do. So on that basis, markers, I've been quite efficient. Let's see how efficient you can be and talk us through the R&R.
Well, a little long answer, so it will take a while. Obviously, resource reserves what actually underpins our production, and also what enables eventually our potential to actually expand our production. So I think just a brief snapshot, I think our track record in terms of not only maintaining, but actually increasing our resources and reserves since acquisition from Anglo is actually quite remarkable. We increased it, you know, by 11.5%, that's after depletion. If we include depletion, in other words, what we actually mine out, we're actually at 23%. And in the, as part of this exploration drive, we increased our life of mine, for instance, at Black Mountain from 2016 and Deeps to 2022. Same at Scorpion by another 5 years to 2020. And the Sheenas, which I included from this slide, you know, we added another 2 years to the life of mine. On top of that, I think Venkat already alluded to the fact of it, that brownfields expansion potential is very limited. I think from an exploration and resource potential, I think we are pretty much unrivaled in that regard. So I think going forward, especially looking at the potential at Kamsberg, at Swartberg, and a new area that we haven't talked much about, it's the Zincline, I think we've got a lot of potential to actually at least double our potential over the next, or our resource base over the next 5 to 6 years. On top of the brownfields effort, we also aggressively stepped into the greenfields exploration field. Over the last couple of years, we accumulated a number of 7 licenses in the area, in our mineral belt, that amounts to about 3,000 square kilometers. And we've actually advanced quite quickly on those. We've done active exploration, we've got boots on the ground, and we actually got 2 drill rigs turning in the greenfield scenario as well. So if it's, you know, if luck is on our side, we'll not only expand the brownfields, but soon also have additions on the greenfield side to add to it. I mean, maybe one aspect is the exploration expenditure. I think Deshni mentioned it was a very impressive number over the last years that we actually expanded. But the biggest budget is actually still to come for this financial year, especially at Kamsberg alone. We're planning to drill another 80,000 meters, and that is to enable those future growth projects like Phase 2, like Kamsberg Phase 3. Next slide. Just to graphically illustrate of the area that we're actually operating in, we've got obviously Swartberg, which is still open at depth. We've got we've tremendously grown that resource from acquisition. Deeps is coming to an end at the moment. The new area is Big Syncline, where we've got a massive low-grade resource, but we're hoping this year to actually, for the first time, declare a maiden resource there, an open pitable maiden resource of maybe 20 to 30 million tons at around 5% lead per se.
When you talk about this year, you mean this last financial year?
This last financial year. So SRK is currently busy updating our resource statement there. And the one important aspect is that in our brownfields environment, all the deposits are currently known are actually outcropping. Everything has been found by looking on the ground and mapping what's there. we have in the past years deployed geophysical methods to actually see a lot deeper, and we've got various exciting targets that could actually result in a completely new discovery. At Gamsberg, I think it's our flagship, you know, project in terms of not only pre-production, but also in terms of resource base. The Gamsberg North ore body is around 180 million tons at 6.5% zinc. What most people don't know, on the eastern side of the mountain, on the other opposite side of the mountain, we've got another resource called Gamsberg East. That's actually a significantly higher grade. That's 30 million tons at 10%. And this is the area that is often referred to as Gamsberg Phase 3, a potential underground mine. All of these targets are still open at depth. Gamsberg North is still open at depth. Gamsberg East is open in all directions along strike, you know, down dip, and on the other side towards the south. And our geophysical work has indicated that the ore, the potential for extension is definitely there. Those purple plates that you see here, our geophysical targets that we are planning to test this financial year. And our belief is certainly that the potential to actually double the resource at Gamsberg is definitely there. Also, I think some of you may have seen the slides or the maps that Patrick presented on site. This structure geologically is almost like a sock-shaped fold. So what you see on surface actually extends into this massive synclinal structure at depth. And what we see today, this comes from itself, this is this area here, this is east, which is this area here, is just the surface of what actually could be there. The ore equivalent horizon, or the mineralized horizon, you know, we've got another 3.5 kilometers at depth that's virtually untested, and that's still open for new discoveries and new expansions.
Okay.
Next one.
This south, because people are asking at the time that south target, this is not the south pit.
Mm-hmm.
This is different. South pit,
south
comes
pit is
within the north.
Just point out, yeah, just point south pit, yeah.
Yeah, this is your main pit area. This is the south pit area. Gamsberg South is not a resource yet, no, but
yeah,
we've got very similar grades to Gamsberg, you know, the higher grade portion of Gamsberg. So
mm-hmm.
definitely another target for resource development. At Scorpion, I mean, everybody knows that it's nearing its end of its life, but I think the good news is that we still got significant resources below the current pit, open pit. We've got a respectable 1.2 million tons at 11% zinc still available for future underground mining. So studies are currently underway to actually see how we can actually utilize that going forward.
I think the important thing to note about Scorpion, though, in terms of our ability to do something immediately after the end of pit 112 is becoming less likely. So we'll definitely look at putting Scorpion in care and maintenance after the pit, which is mined, and forecasting that for the end of this calendar year. After the pit is mined, we'll look at doing some concurrent rehabilitation and some rehabilitation after that. But the plant will then be, we can then treat material for another 12 months after that. After that point, we look at then putting the plant in care and maintenance and then going after what's underground. But it's not going to be a seamless transition from where we are today to where we need to be. I think, and, you know, in Venkat's discussion on markets, it's also something that the market should be factoring, that, you know, Scorpion's tonnage won't be there after 2020.
And then on the other side, on the more greenfield side, there is another project, the Agro, which was discovered in 2008. That stands currently at 18 million tons at 8.7% zinc, 2.4% lead, 40 grams of silver. So also a respectable, decently graded resource that is currently a JV with Trevally, and the opportunity to obviously expand that further and grow that resource is certainly still there. Also, this deposit is still open at depth. And obviously, we are not having given up to try to look for new areas. We're currently actively exploring on the licenses surrounding these areas. So we've got a project here called Zeebrugge, and this is our main exploration license surrounding Scorpion. So
I think on Gurguru, it's a sulfide deposit, so whereas Scorpion is an oxide deposit, and that's relevant because if we are going to treat it as a Scorpion, we must look at a refinery conversion. And when Satish speaks, he'll remind you that we did do the work, and we need to take a decision, but following whatever decision we take at Humsburg. So I think at Scorpion in Namibia, we're still excited about the regional synergies that we can still harvest because of harness, because, you know, we can't let Africa's only zinc refinery today go into care and maintenance. So definitely the plan for the team and I is to look at how we can fill it. And the only way you fill a refinery, if you want to look at a custom model, is to make it as low cost as possible. So putting it into care and maintenance gives us the opportunity to do exactly that. Okay, thank you, Marcus. On the next slide, what we tried to put together, I think, before Pushpender and Satish speaks, is more or less where we are today and how you should be looking at us going forward. You know, today, in terms of the last 2 years, we kind of produced, you know, around 150,000-160,000 tons, right? Way below our capacity in terms of metal. But again, you know, if you look at Andre, might be 70,000 tons, but that's him pushing maximum tonnage through his plant. And that's because of the grade that we haven't had at Black Mountain in the last couple of years. Scorpion, this year only produced 65,000 tons. And you know from the calls that we had issues right at the start of the year, last year, in terms of the maintenance shot that we took, and we got slightly behind on the stripping, and that is what caused us quite a poor quarter two. We didn't end the last quarter as strong as we envisaged, because we did have some industrial action. But the long and short of Scorpion is, I think in the last quarter, we definitely demonstrated that we can push Scorpion at back to that 140,000 ton run rates to the back end of the plant. That started to give us confidence that next year is indeed possible. Humsburg, Satish will talk about the ramp up. And although it's not the ramp up that we were envisaging last year this time, and we can explain the various reasons for that, we still ended the year, I think, at a respectable rate of being at least or having 80% availability in sight in terms of what the plant is capable of. And again, that's an important number when you look at what we are forecasting next year. This coming year is a very big and exciting year for Zinc International, where Black Mountain, you know, become a very consistent producer for us. We'll continue at similar levels, although the grade does decrease even further in the coming year. Scorpion will treat 130,000 tons, which means that it needs to produce from the word go, okay? So 200,000 tons are already better than what we produced in this last financial year. Humsburg will be a full capacity year for us in terms of 4 million tons, or as close to 4 million tons as we can get. The reason for 200,000 tons as opposed to a higher number is that we won't get an average higher grade that we would like to. That comes in the next year. So that's how you should look at us. And I think what I like about this coming year is that we've almost taken the Lachine mine that we lost at acquisition and we replaced it with Humsburg phase one. Okay, but then in the next 2 years, Scorpion starts to ramp down, which is the plan. And then depending on how quickly we can get Humsburg Phase 2 approved, which is a delta 200,000 tons, Humsburg Phase 2 for me then replaces Scorpion. And that's how you should look at this business. In terms of the mining that we are doing, Black Mountain can stay constant. In fact, Black Mountain has upside here, which we've not built in, simply because we've not approved any of those plans. It does have further upside to 70, but if it stays, Scorpion ramps on as it's supposed to. Phase one replaces Lachine for us. We get back to the 400,000 level, depending on how quick, so that it doesn't create an ore gap post Scorpion. Phase two then creates another replacement with a little bit of growth. And then as Marco showed you, that sweeter kind of Humsburg East, still in concept from us from a project point of view, but has exciting enough grades that it can give us a delta 150,000 tons. That will have a longer lead time, even once we take the decision, because it's an underground deposit. The box in gray, and many of you know what the model across Vedanta is, specifically in Hindustan Zinc. We want to be a metal producer ultimately. If you want to make real value here, you've got to be an integrated metal producer for two reasons. Firstly, there's value in it. Secondly, from a logistics point of view, once we become a 400,000-500,000 ton of metal in concentrate producer, no ways you're going to be able to truck or move over a million tons of concentrate. So it's against all of those reasons that we are going after the value addition route. We had lunch with many of you and explained some of this already. I think why we are excited about doing this in South Africa today, because you know we have a president who's really gung-ho about investments. So following the inauguration, in fact, it was announced at the inauguration that the president has set up an intergovernmental task team to support us to look at the value addition side around hospital. Okay. So that's how you should look at us. That's what you heard my boss calling the route map. That's our route map. Okay. Next slide. I think, Pushpinder, if you can just summarize very quickly, and then we can always come back to this in the end.
In terms of reserve and resource, as Marcus has probably articulated, so the good thing is we have a very good record of increasing the R&R. So since acquisition, we have increased 23% R&R and before depletion. And the great thing is we're not stopping here. The next year plan is very exciting. Even we're spending significant money to do another 116,000 meter of drilling next year and across the geography. In terms of current year production, the financial 19, which is just finished, against the guidance of 115 kt, the Scorpion and Black Mountain has produced 135 kt. So as Deshni has mentioned, Scorpion was a bit behind in terms of the deferment of some of the high growth area over into the next year, as well as the quarter one shutdown. Black Mountain is consistent producer and broadly has put the plan for the financial year 19. The key focus for both Black Mountain and Scorpion to reducing the cost for the next year. If I covering the next year financial year plan on the outlook side, Scorpion is broadly planning 130,000. The great thing about Scorpion is the next year is going to be a very, very exciting next year for Scorpion. With the 200,000 MIC coming out from the mining side in the 9 months, out of that we are 130,000 is we are refining the final metal, and 70,000 will be carried through the following year, which will be refined in the next year. And in terms of Black Mountain, again, consistent producer of 70,000 ton in the next year. Again, in terms of the cost of production, both for the Black Mountain and Scorpion, the current year Scorpion cost was in the range of 2,500, which is going to be reduced to around the $1,400, less than $1,400 in the next year. So that is one of the key initiative in terms of adding efficiency, as even the stripping cost is coming down, resulting significant EBITDA potential for Scorpion in the coming year. Moving to the Humsenberg operation, overall, the full ramp up for the Humsenberg operation is planned by H1 of the financial year 20. The project is well completed within 400 million. Even within the 400 million also, we did a bit of re-engineering and invested some money into the IT infrastructure and digital. We made our first shipment on 26 December 2018. And the next shipment is almost either it should have gone by now, Raj, and it is in the viewpoint. In terms of financial year 19 and the production expected, we ended the year with the 17 kt from the Hansford for the full year production. And the next year plan is with a ramp up happening. The next year plan is to produce 200 KTPA in the next financial year 20. Humsenberg targeted COP in the range of $952,000 per ton, which put Humsenberg into the first quartile of the global cost curve. Broadly, during our discussion on the mine visit, also I clarified something on the COP as well. And as in the
broad. What's exciting, as we said before, but I don't want you to lose this point, is that this is a variable number.
Yeah.
Typically, mines would have, you know, 60 is good. 70% would be fixed, 30% would be variable. The way we've done Humsenberg, it's the other way around. 70% of our cost base should be variable in the model that we have.
85%. We are trying to be like a city.
So that's a difference. So it's performance linked, it's rate linked.
And this is a broad breakup of the production. So the financial year 20, we're looking 130,000 from Scorpion, Black Mountain 70,000, and Humsenberg 200,000. The 400,000 kind of metal in the coming year. From ramping up from 150,000 feet to be delivered in the current year at the overall COP of less than $1,200. And overall, we are looking as a business more than 40% of the EBITDA potential, which is very really important for us. Including phase two, which is we covered in the previous slide as well, again, which is ready for the feasibility, as the feasibility is done almost, and ready to press the button subject to the approvals and all. We are looking, Scorpion is coming down, but phase two with the 200,000 new capacity is coming in, taking overall production from 400,000 to 500,000. Again, given the Humsenberg phase two is also going to be the low cost producer, so accordingly, we are saying COP will be reduced by another $100 to bring in overall 500,000 ton of production at less than $100 per ton of COP. The phase three still in the concept stage, but with the phase three adding another 150,000 from the rich ore body with a 10% grade, again, low cost producer still maintaining the COP of 1,100 overall produce 650,000 tons of production. So that is overall of the next three phases of the business
the key focus is how the cost can be maintained at less than 1100 to produce more than 40% of the EBITDA potential.
Thank you. For the
sound show. we spoke very well at the site visit, so but I think we will go through the slides then. Yeah, because most of it we spoke. Just to give you a perspective how the area looked like in as far as May 2017, this is how the area looked like, and where in October 2018 how we changed the landscape of this place. Yeah, so this is like we've been speaking about the Amsberg being the anchor for growth, you know. The phase one of the project is complete, as we just reiterated, $400 million investment, 4 million tons per annum of ore, giving 250,000 tons of metal in concentrate. I think we discussed all these numbers, ore to concentrate, all these numbers we discussed during the site visit, 6 to 9 months of ramp up to its full capacity, COP at first quartile. So what phase two will deliver is the Amsberg mega pit, which we again spoke. The production, although the ore treatment or the ore production capacity is doubling from 4 MTPA to 8 MTPA, but the MIC production is changing from 250 to 450. The reason for that is the phase two is slightly lower grade than the phase one in terms of average. This is, we already considered the layout of the phase two when designing the phase one itself. So for us, this project is a natural offshoot of phase one, which can go seamlessly into execution with all the learnings done from taken from the phase one project. What phase three can deliver is the underground possibility, what Marcus explained for the Amsberg East. Amsberg has got extension areas possible. And as Deshni pointed out, in our vision to produce the full metal from the Amsberg being an integrated producer, we are looking at Amsberg smelter refinery. Currently, the feasibility studies are currently in progress. And here the intention is very clear. The intention is that how do we get the smelter refinery as part of the overall project so that we can get an integrated metal production, ultimately to 500,000 tons, but in a modular fashion, following phase one of smelter and phase two of smelter, so that the smelter can also follow a modular fashion of execution. So total potential for Amsberg is 600,000 tons, but from 250 to 450 to 600,000 tons. In terms of phase one itself, I hope I'm not boring with whatever we discussed. The open pit, this is the scope of the project, what the $400 million bought us into. This is the open pit mining, which included a pre-stripping, developing the full mine, developing the infrastructure, designing and building a 4 million tons.
One second, I just want to make sure everyone does have a copy of this, right? It was published
online.
It was published online. Yeah. You want to tell the teams where it is?
Yeah, well then, it's a part of our Vedanta Limited website, so you can go back and download it under investor presentations.
Okay. Yeah. Right, so that I know some of you taking notes, etc., but we will definitely share it.
Yeah, tailing storage facility, which we saw from the mine itself. Again, this project being a greenfield, we had to bring in the power, water, buildings. We even constructed many houses for our employees in the town. So all these were part of this project. So when we say about a mining project, this is the support infrastructure is very, very important to ensure that we get
so
into.
I think support from a greenfields point of view, right? I mean, to build where there wasn't. I'm sure Satish mentioned it during the trip, during the visit, but a 38-kilometer pipeline, you know, along a community is not an easy task, especially in the terrain in which we built it. The tailings dam, it's actually from a design point of view, is also quite a unique design.
Yes.
So you showed the team on the top of that. Yeah. It's also won a few awards as well.
International for the design. For the design, Okay, next one.
I think this
should
be a more exciting slide.
Yeah, so this question was asked to us that many times, I think some of you asked that, how did we manage to reduce from $600 million to $400 million? It came by, I can put it broadly in three buckets, essentially re-engineering. We had to go back to the drawing board to see how can we innovate, how can we bring in some, and in here, this is a partnership approach. And the whole project execution with various EPCs on board, various OEMs on board, we actually utilized them. We came up together with various ideas. How do we innovate? For example, a simple way, like the 40-kilometer pipeline which we spoke, the initial design was, because it is 70 bar pressure, it has to be designed. People came up with an idea, the OEM came up with an idea that why can't we put up an intermediate pump station, which will actually reduce the design and reduce the requirement of a high thickness pipeline, which neatly came down by $6-7 million, automatically came down. So the whole approach of re-engineering and innovation was, how do we get into a partnership approach? Of course, there are a lot of commercial optimization, and this is where many of the operating model change also helped us. Initially, we were supposed to buy the trucks ourselves. We said, let's utilize the contract mining. Now, a typical way, this is very interesting, that in a typical way, we expect that, go to a contract mining methodology, the CapEx will be shifted to OpEx. This is what the typical common sense says. But here, we got the benefit of those as well, that operating costs didn't go up, because there was a time when the iron ore, because Northern Cape is meant for a lot of iron ore mining, the movements are mining around 70 million tons, and that 70 million tons dropped down to 20 million tons, and that 50 million ton capacity, we got that benefit. So it was essentially people were ready to give us on an incremental cost basis in terms of writing of the assets of the mining.
I think it's important to note, why did we reduce the capital? Because you remember the time when we approved this project, we approved it in August 2014, I think final approval, November 2014, board approval. We all know what happened in 2015. The market started to tank.
Yeah.
So it was the necessity of keeping the project alive and still executing it that drove this kind of innovation in terms of how we then went about to re-engineer, renegotiate some of the rates, and obviously got some of the currency benefits then. But the point that Satish made is, because the rest of the mining industry was also going to the downturn, there was actually yellow metal standing that typically wouldn't be standing, that we then took advantage of. I like to summarize this by almost saying that it's about how you don't let a good crisis go to waste.
Yes.
That, it's something we've never had, I think, the privilege of doing in most of our lifetimes previously. We got to execute a project in the downturn and actually took the market advantage that would typically give you, and then ramped up and now delivering in a market that's actually appreciated. That's unique. It wasn't designed this way, by the way. I think it became opportunistic.
Yeah. And the results are here to see that in terms of capital intensity, Hansberg project will be one of the best in terms of capital intensity in one of the recent projects. Now, in terms of ramp up, ramp up is very, very important. Hansberg is considered to be a complex ore, which we spoke about, the various mineralogy, how do we ensure that the blending happens? So this is in terms of comparison with the various ramp-up of the new greenfield concentrators and various process plants, we stand well among the top. That how do we ramp up? Of course, we have a way to go. We've reached almost 60%, I can say, but the remaining 40% we need to reach the ramp-up stages. This just gives you an idea that in March, we exceeded the 2.4 million tons capacity throughput. And we need to reach a design capacity of 4 million tons. And we strongly believe that this plant, with its design and the capacities which has been built in, that this can definitely reach 4.4 million tons, as with like any other mills, because the mills have got the potential to reach beyond its capacity, and an exit rate of 100,000 tons per annum in terms of metal in concentrate. The next year's target is 180 to 200,000 tons. Metal and concentrate. Somebody was asking me about the whole the COP distribution of the project itself, and how do we? And this gives you a very. In fact, I was telling that yes, we'll discuss during the presentation. So you'll see a good idea about how the current Hansberg COP is being distributed between the direct operating cost versus the TCRCs, which included the TCRCs, but mining and processing is more or less 25 and 30% within the mining processing, and then enabling. And this is where the operating model comes into play as well. So if you can look at this enabling cost, this is quite low in terms of the overall cost model. And this is where, like, some people are asking me how many employees have we got in Vedanta payroll. And I said, and people are not ready to believe that number. So I think this is the effect of those operating models.
So it's a lean team. I mean, very delayed as well. But I think what the nature of the job has changed.
Yeah.
You know, when you've outsourced mining as well as your plant maintenance and operations, the job of the owner's team is actually to assure, you know, to control, monitor, and also to add value, which is typical from or different from running something. And I have to say, as owners, we're still learning to make this model more effective. But that's how we have designed it. I think what's key to note on this slide is that, you know, when you typically have to rationalize capital, you often think it's going to come at the cost of OPEX down the line. I think what the team has very smartly been able to do is to rationalize the capital and through a very different operating model, still keep the OPEX as low as possible. What I like about this COP distribution, it actually justifies the business case for the smelter.
Because that's the TCRC portion is what the smelter will eat into it.
Exactly.
Plus the 15% additional metal. Because the payable is only 85%.
I think some of you have asked the question, you know, how did you manage to do it? You know, when companies before you couldn't do it, etc. What Satish has just mentioned on firstly doing it in a modular fashion. Secondly, when markets tanked, you know, you would typically in big corporates shelve a project, wait for markets to recover, to restart. We actually changed the model so that we could still do it. I think what was very attractive and key and helped us from a cash flow point of view is that for the majority of the timeline of this project, thanks to Pushpinder and the team, a lot of the funding happened internally. So this project was actually only externally funded towards the last few months of this project. We brought in external funding. We did bring a little bit of group equity, which helped. So group equity, external funding came to the end. You know, we've actually committed most of this money now, but we start repaying the debt when we generate it.
And some,
again, I think not the way we wanted it, but thanks to banks, they didn't want to support
during
the pure play zinc producer during the downturn is what necessitated this innovation.
So when we started the first blast and then what we call it the pre-start mining, creating the access to the mountain, access to the mine, we kept the mining ongoing, but we didn't start to the bulk pre-stripping and the plant construction at that point of time, because that was what was supposed to spend the money maximum. But we kept the mining going in such a level that we're ready for bulk mining as soon as, you know, we're immediately. So the trick in the project management is if you start spending the money, spend it fast and finish it fast. So I think that's fundamental as it is.
No, but we've learned lessons, but we'll share those lessons with some other time.
We discussed a lot about the quality management. Again, the questions came through that how are you resolving the manganese, and I explained how we manage manganese, manage in inverted commas, how we manage it, and how the stockpile management, the whole logistics, the logistics chain, how do we make sure that from here with 36 tons truck, use the road network, the road infrastructure is quite good, and take it to Sultana Port and then ship the concentrate from there. We had a fairly large size shipment very recently, Raj, the March shipment.
The bigger one is
30,000 tons. 30,000
tons, yeah. I think the key on that slide, you don't have to go back to David, it's fine. I think the key on that slide for us is, again, another question of how did you make it work when some of the predecessors couldn't. It's that whole approach to how to better manage the manganese from pit all the way through the value chain.
Yeah.
And that's where, I mean, this leads nicely into this slide. I think something that this project wasn't originally planned for was a digitalization, something that became very apparent as we looked at the data as to what we need to do to better manage and control it, was how do we get this access to this data in real time. So that's another differentiator. You know, first we did it modular, then we shaved off the capital, we changed the operating model to reduce the OPEX, but to further de-risk that OPEX, we then looked at digitalization
and technology
to help us So I think to reduce our cost, but also to de-risk the quality.
So we this is again a very important slide with a lot of information, but this is again, you saw that during the site visit, whether it is smart ore movement, whether it is the whole plant automation, advanced process control, the wood grew, flotation cells, the laboratory, although we were rushing you through the laboratory, but you know,
that's world something. Class. I don't know how many of you have been to other robotic labs, but that is a world-class lab. I think what you, and again, you know, where you went in the middle, actually people should never be there.
That's so very odd,
yeah. No, it's not that it's unsafe. The robots won't do anything to you. But, you know, that's, I mean, again, we haven't taken the jobs away. And I think that's what everyone is now talking about in the industry, right? We've changed the nature of the jobs. So the job's now gone from one of quality assurance to actually manually feeding examples.
Exactly. This is, again, a lot of questions.
Satish is not spending more time on that slide, but I think we can take it offline through Shneya and send you more details. So to me, that slide is our single differentiator in the world.
Yeah.
You know, whereas many companies, I'm not going to name all of them, are talking about digitalization. They're all talking about a retrofitted digitalization strategy.
And again, I explained what
and how they're going to, you know, create digital twins. Yeah. This is unique in that we are starting with a digitalization strategy in mind from now, and almost building a culture around how we can digitally enhance this this operation. So from the put Wi-Fi to how we then manage, you know, meetings through tablets, you know, access to the real-time data. I mean, this will be a very different look and feel mind in future. And that's really what we're driving.
Sorry, Shneya, can I just ask you, I mean, while you're talking about this, like, were you saying the HP drilling, does that mean you're going to have autonomous drilling?
Yes.
Yes, eventually.
So everything in green at the top of the slide is existing. Anything in brown is our brain.
We're
working towards our process.
Okay. A digital route back.
So phase two. So I think this has been all, again, a lot of questions were asked about how do we start. We explained the concept, we explained the design. As I said, the phase two's approach is to expand the mine from 4 million tons per annum to generate 8 million tons per annum of ore and install additional 4 million tons per annum concentrator and put an associated infrastructure so the MIC can be increased from 250 to 450,000 tons. So that's the purpose of phase two. The feasibility is complete. We did the complete mine design. The mine plan has been completed. Mine scheduling has been completed. Now we exactly know what benches, when it has to be mined, how much pre-stripping has to be done. We have an indicative cap, when I say indicative project capex, we have feasibility capex, and then this is what we are targeting, $350 million. So what we are saying is the $400 million investment, which is this is going to be a duplication of the mine as well as the plant. We will be able to do it within $350 million capital over a period of next 3 years. And the intention is to do it from the 100% equity basis from our own generations from Ramsburg. So this project is definitely on for us. And as a project person, you know, always it's beneficial that before this project gets completely lined up, and we can start the next project. A lot of other, so for example, somebody asked me why that the construction camp, why we're not taking it back. The purpose of this, we'll use this so that we don't need to put up additional another $5-6 million of capital of investment for the construction camp again, because that's available already. So many other facilities. So this project, and this is typical of a Vedanta way of doing the project. If you look at Hindustan Zinc, how many modular expansions have happened? You can see that. And Ramsburg will follow that methodology of modular expansions, whether it is phase two, whether it is smelter, and that's our Vedanta way of doing the projects so that the benefit can be immediately realized and the execution is seamless.
As seamless as it can be. But I'm sure the team appreciated the efforts of the remoteness of the site. Satish, when he says it now, it makes it sound very easy. But you know, during execution, to have such a remote site and to manage the supply chain around that, you know, even within the EPC, I think those are where some of the lessons have also come into from an execution point of view.
Yeah, project execution, the approach, where the somebody was asking about the lump sum turnkey approach, the EPC model, which scope of the project has to be EPC, which scope has to be owner driven. So those quite a good learning is there. As far as phase two is concerned, now we're much more confident than there's a lot of learning. So phase one is there. Smelter is a large project. We are estimating at the initial estimates have come to around $800 to $850 million. It's a large investment. Again, this is we will be spending this year, and this involves a lot of what we call it in our project execution, the technical stream and the non-technical stream. The non-technical stream, we spoke about intergovernmental task team, the possibility of which is definite now, that this zone will be classified as a special economic zone to get the possible tax benefits in terms of the value addition, in terms of beneficiation, the whole sulfuric acid value chain, the downstream value addition. So there is a lot of parallel activities happening at this point of time to ensure that both the technical side and the non-technical side comes in together so that this project is realized. And this project for us, this is not only creating a metal, but this will change the whole landscape of this place. We spoke about the unemployment. No, this is, and why the smelter is warranted here, I think there's no question mark. Now we will be the one of the biggest integrated producers at a 500,000 tons capacity. I think there is nothing.
From a location, single location point of view, that will be one of the more exciting complexes.
But a lot of work still required.
Absolutely. I mean, the commitment is clear. I think, we realize that, to make money, real money in this area, we have to look at integrated production. The work that we're doing with the government is also understanding on the wave of industrialization that this creates. Satish spoke about acid, and that acid needs to find an industry. The plants we have in India is basically fertilizer plants on our doorsteps. So a similar model could work there. But then look at the downstream, impact that will have. Spoke about Sean's project on the broad-based livelihood. Imagine having a broad-based livelihood project on the back of fertilizer that you further enrich with zinc metal.
Electricity, because I think there are a lot of questions during the site visit on the ESCOM power situation. And this smelter will require 200 megawatt, and we are quite well aware of this. We're quite well aware of the challenges, and we have options open. Not only discussions with ESCOM, but also I'm looking at various ways of how do we become self-sufficient. And
all know that, as Venkat so far spoke about our power business, I mean, Vedanta does have the capacity and capability of building power plants. It's something we must think about if we want this completely secure. I think what we can tell you is that we're not going to make any decisions until we are very clear on the power security, as well as the tariff, as well as on the asset offtake, because there's no ways you're going to move without being sure that asset can be. We have an optic, and then the big bucket for us is the logistics. And in that, we can put everything else into that bucket. But in terms of the acid, the fertilizer, proximity to ports, etc., the whole logistics system is what to work around.
See, as far as the technology of smelting business is concerned, I think nobody can doubt us with our capability at Hindustan Zinc being, and we call ourselves as the biggest smelting company.
From an integrated point of view. Yeah. All right. Thank you, Satish. And I think Satish, we didn't have more time with you, but I think you've given Satish more than
back,
enough
yeah.
to talk about. I think then just in summary, because we've touched all of this, and you mentioned that safety is the first value and why. Venkat very nicely touched on, why this is the right commodity today. I think what the message I want to give there is not only is the right commodity, but we're actually at the right geography/address. To leverage off the strong fundamentals we're seeing on both supply and demand. As an operation, I think VZI has actually built a very good track record now. We've actually put the money into exploration. We've delivered, more than 11.5% of an increase since acquisition. We've managed to successfully increase the life of mine of all of our operations in terms of what we bought from Anglo American. That's been a very good success story for us. I've mentioned the exploration and nothing more than that, not only in the brownfields extensions, but with the work that Marcus and the team have done, we actually believe we now have much more set up to find discoveries. And Marcus has a very tight KPI in that regard. And we are ready, as you've heard, to deliver the 400,000 tons this year. And again, that will be a fantastic win for us as a business. And at today's metal prices, and I think because you're all visiting us today, the metal price went above $3,000 per ton. So you must come anytime. But even that EBITDA margin is actually greater than 40% at these prices, right? I think from a project track record point of view, again, you know, Vedanta's built successful projects in India. You know, we are one of India's largest FDIs. I think the ability to now build projects in the way we've done it in Africa and in South Africa specifically starts to talk about a nice way of doing projects here successfully. I think, as I mentioned it earlier, but we definitely are becoming an investor of choice for both the Northern Cape as well as South Africa at large. If I look at the kind of support that we're getting from this government, but we all realize that it's only going to be successful if we can deliver these kinds of volumes and keep as low down the cost curve as possible, because that's what's going to enable us to weather all the forthcoming commodity cycles that we know. We're very clear on what the future looks like in terms of how we take the current phase one to, you know, from 4 million to 8 million, how we take the current 250,000 ton capacity, add another 200,000 tons to it to give us 450,000 tons. I think that work has been done. It's now all about execution. The smelter becomes a very attractive value differentiator for us. And the job is not whether we do it. I think the job of the team and ourselves right now is to make sure we can make it work in this geography. What we've not mentioned clearly there, but I know we have spoken to you at other capital markets, Dave, there's still other upside in this portfolio. So when we bought the assets from Anglo American, the story was going to be, how do we ramp, you know, take as much of the value as possible from the current assets, but how do we ramp them down? And then the story becomes Humsburg. You know, today we can say that we, you know, we've extended Scorpion beyond what we thought. There's still some optionality below that current put shell. Andre's got optionality in an open put operation at Spurg. Marcus told us about a big syncline reserve, maiden reserve and resource that we're about to declare. So the area continues to be very prospective for us. So that is upside in this area. And, you know, the last thing I want to say is that, you know, from a DNA point of view, many of you know this, I've worked in Anglo American for over 20 years before joining Vedanta. What makes us, I think, a credible success story in terms of delivery against commitments, and hence the track record that we've managed to do, is that we operate with a very different DNA. You know, the DNA for one, for me, is a very devolved model. So all the action is here. There's very little action happening in Johannesburg. And that's the way we want to keep it, despite the size of business that we become. So very limited overheads. We value partnerships. Again, it was a very bold decision to completely outsource this operation. Although we all thought it would make sense paper-wise, but we've never done it before. So we value partnerships. From what you would have seen with the teams, we have very diverse teams. They're young, and we have a lot of women on the site. We have over 33% women on the site. Again, an opportunity that with the green fields, you can start by getting it right. I'm not sure if you saw Rash. Did they see Rash?
Yeah,
our plant head is a woman as well. Again, a model that I believe is what's needed if you want to disrupt this industry and be successful at it. We embrace technology and digital. Anand can tell you, based on the conversation that I had with him earlier, my mind's going wild in this space, because you have to unlock the opportunities now. I think what I'm concerned about, if we don't get it done today, it's going to become the culture, and I don't want that to happen. So this must continue to actually deliver a mine that can be paperless as soon as possible, said the CEO, talking of a piece of paper. Next time we get it right. I do want to take, and I think this is important, the way we've done it, you know, people, and I was quite humbled with the way the president recognized it when he was here on the 28th. It's not about what we've done that has made this an exciting story for all of us. It's the how. It's how we've taken local communities along and how we will continue to do that. And the fact that, you know, if you listen to our chairman speak, you know, as a philanthropist, it's all about what are we doing to make sure that the communities in which we operate are benefited from it. That is what drives us in terms of the how. And that is why the projects like community Wi-Fi, the broad livelihood project will actually continue for us. So we are clear on the vision. We believe we are the right team. We've set this up to do something that I think, you know, people for 40 years couldn't do. We've actually ticked a few boxes right now. I think we couldn't be more set up to deliver this pipeline than we are today. Thank you so much for coming along and listening to us. It's an exciting story, and we really want you to be part of this journey with us going forward. All right, so on that line, I know we've taken up all your time, but I think it is important that you have to hear this from us. We have time for a few Q&As. Raj, you're so keen to show the video. Do you really? How many minutes is the video, Dave?
3 and a bit minutes.
Yeah, I think you can.
Actually, just one question. By the time the smelter comes in, after 4 to 5 years, you will still be 2/3 concentrate, right? Because by then your concentrate would have moved to 650 kt.
Yeah, it all depends. So you know what? You're absolutely right. It all depends on when we start phase two, and in terms of the ramp up of phase two.
So is there a possibility that you go slow on phase two and do the smelter first?
If there's a possibility, and this is something we're working on, there's a possibility of doing phase one here, 250. Also looking at retrofitting Scorpion, that gives us another 150, and then deciding to then convert Scorpion to fully custom, and then building phase two here for another 250.
What's the cost of retrofitting Scorpion?
So the front end, but that was a couple of years ago.
Yeah, so that we need to, of course, looking at the, because it included, putting what is the roaster in front of the current leaching and the other sections, plus doing some retrofit on the current equipment. So that will slightly change, but when you looked at 2 years back, it was $160 million.
But I mean, even if it's $200 million, it's still an exciting proposition for 150,000 tons of metal.
And imagine the logistics distance. It's only 450 km.
And it can come up before your own smelter.
Yes, it can. But that's the work that we want to do. So our work right now is to take all of these discrete parts that work together and look at how do we optimize this over the next year.
And we'd also look at, one is CapEx. Another is, of course, rather than in one location, because one location gets a lot of other benefits in terms of OpEx. So
just one more question. Hindustan Zinc did this last year, and there was a lot of ifs and buts of whether they should do again, which is hedging. Zinc is at $3,000. You have a very aggressive CapEx program which is lined up. Would you, as the head of the Zinc International business, look to hedge some of your volumes to lock in some of the cash?
I'm going to answer that. I'm going to hand over to Pushpender. I won't look at it for capital projects. I definitely might look at it for Scorpion, because I have a short life at Scorpion left. I've got the bulk of my metal that I've been stripping all this time for. If I want to guarantee and give us some certainty, I might look at hedging a portion.
So, as a matter of policy or broadly Vedanta practice, normally our practice is not to put for any market hedging as a policy across the country. And our focus is to achieve the average month of production LME, because we are a miner, yeah. We are a producer. Our job is to, we are producing, market is keep moving up and down. If it is longer term, we still achieve the average month LME. So, that is our key practice across the group. But if there is a, to Deshni's point, if there is a strategy call we need to take, we definitely need to consider being a Scorpion producer. Part of the
quantity. So he said his job is to meet the monthly LME strong. His job is to better than that.
Just that I'm clear, when you talk about CapEx, say the 400 million, that is the total 100% of the project.
Yes.
I.e. Vedanta is in for 69.6%.
Correct.
That includes everything.
Yeah. That's 100%. That's correct. That's 100% at the entity level.
At the BMM level.
Okay, but where Exora participating?
They are shareholders into the BMM legal entity.
They fund the 26.4%.
Yes. Well, when you say funding, I mean essentially what's happened here is that we've self-funded, as I said, at an entity level, and they're shareholders at the top.
They've
not, yeah.
Nixara have indicated
that they want to exit.
What is your
we're in the process of actually working on their exit plan with Exaro.
So will there be a listing?
For Zing International, potentially. Hey, I think that's one way of us getting access to capital.
And them also exiting, right? I mean.
Sorry, you said exiting.
Exaro exiting.
Yes.
BMM.
Yes.
So does BMM, if it gets listed, then they get an exit, right?
Okay. They're not linked. So firstly, I mean, Exaro, to Simon's point, they've indicated at least 4 years that they want to exit. And simply put, Exaro used to be in Zinc, as you remember. They owned RPZC next to us in Scorpion. They've also owned the Germiston smelter down the road from us in Johannesburg. And strategically, they decided to exit Zinc. But for various reasons, including wanting to see Hamsburg phase one off the ground, made a lot of sense for them to stay in the asset. So for all of those reasons, they held on to this, but their intention to exit was made very clear 4 years ago. So back to Bruce's point, Bruce, the funding has been done at an entity level, not at a shareholder level.
Okay.
So all the loan agreements, etc., was done, all the loan agreements that we put in place, either intercompany to get some cash in, and then some of the equity deals that we've done at a group level to support us in the financing, and now the ICICI Bank financing that we've just done, has all been with Exaro through the board's support in terms of rates, etc. Which is fine. I mean, it's all done at arm's length.
I'm just thinking, I mean, they're a big entity. You've done all the work. Do you guys get a management fee?
No, we do not get a management fee. So I have to be fair to Exaro. Since we went on an expansion phase, they've not taken any dividends out of this business. Neither have we. So that's an agreement we had.
Sure.
All right. Any other questions?
So the strategy of outsourcing quite a bit of the operations. How do you make sure you do not create too reliance from your third party, from your suppliers, or your service providers? How do you make sure you still the capacity still sits within your data when you have outsourced quite a bit of the critical aspects, especially you know the digitalized.
So I mean, across the road at Black Mountain, it's all insourced. So Black Mountain plant is an in-source plant, so something we do ourselves. So there's capacity and capability 20 kilometers away. And we've got the rest of Vedanta as well. But what we've done to keep everyone honest in this is these are not long-term contracts by definition. These are 3 to 5 years. So mining is done in a five-year contract, which is when you have about 18 months, 2 years left. And then the plant is only done in a three-year contract. Okay, so we're keeping both parties honest. I mean, question always tell our teams if they can do a better job, and that's a case that we must look at. The reason we outsourced wasn't just because it was a sexy model and we said let's go and do it. The reason we outsourced is because from a remoteness point of view, in terms of ramp up, etc., to you know the time wasted to get our own teams in and then try to ramp up in terms of skills and training would have been too long. From a cost point of view as well, the model worked, made a lot of sense for us because this particular outsourced party has got about 90 operations that they look after, okay? So from synergies in terms of their supply chain, synergies in terms of their maintenance capacity, you know, we don't have a standalone maintenance, huge maintenance team here. We have a lean maintenance team that looks after, you know, the PM work, but anything outside of this, they then go and tap in from their central pool. So the model made sense for us based on where we are. But one of the key considerations, and something we mentioned earlier, is that we put a lot of pressure on Minitrex to recruit as many people locally as possible. Because that's exactly what we all cared about, right? That as many local people get employed. So that's how the model works. And what they've had to do, and in their defense, I think it has cost them maybe more money, is that they've had to then bring in locals, skilled, because we didn't have the skills in the region, and then bring in operators from elsewhere to shadow them for a period until they got up to speed. So again, as I said this before, the model has not been without its challenges. I still believe commercially that this model made a lot of sense, and it's really up to us as a team to make sure that it does work.
Cost was not,
but it's not a forever scenario.
And also, it is the cost is not the driving factor for this. Cost was never, because the employee pay or anything is, it's the same. In fact, there's no differentiator there. It is more, how do we bring in efficiency? How do you bring expertise? I think that's where the, for example, like...
as required basis, yeah. As opposed to having expertise set here.
Yeah, on moldments now, in terms of mining, we hit the fully ramp up tonnages within 3 months of startup, which I can almost assure that if we would have started the recruitment, because that's where the expertise came.
It's also the model, right? Yeah. Because if it's a rate contract, he's not going to get paid if he doesn't deliver the BCMs on a movement's point of view. Whereas, I mean, all his team, you can structure whatever performance schemes. I mean, Andre has had this conversation a few times with us. You can structure the performance schemes, but these guys are working for a fixed salary. It's something I think for the industry to think about. As I talk about digital and technology, I think this operating model change, step change. And maybe back to your point, and I know why you say it, because you're a metallurgist like myself. This is core for us. You know, it's how then as an industry do we actually digest this? You know, take away what was typically core. Okay. Anything else?
So when we were doing the site visit, you know, what we came across is, you know, the progress from phase one to phase two. Involved a lot of changes in the sense that we started with the south pit. You know, we have a east starter pit, there's a west pit, which is, you know, both of them are eventually going to grow large and merge. Mm-hmm. And you know, you put, you know, the, you know, west material into the south pit. Mm-hmm. So all this flux happening into the mining operations, and you know, if I see the rest of the portfolio, Scorpion has one pit 112, which will produce, you know, suddenly 130 KT and, you know, sort of die down. Then you have Dips, which probably will sort of die down, and Swartberg will replace it. So all these fluxes, fluctuations, how do you project the cost with so much certainty and the volumes also? I mean, what are the risks or what are the assumptions that goes into it?
Okay. I can answer, but I think Pushpender, you want to get this?
Yeah, first thing, I think, as you said, we got the Black Mountain current SPU, which contains Deeps and Swartberg as a one mine. So if I talk about production, definitely Andre can give more details, but
we have a very detailed mining plan, how deep is coming down, and how Swartberg is going to be.
Again, if you look at our track record of performance, we definitely would be doing the production forecast we are delivering according to. So there is a very strong plan for this, again, they go to Deeps and Swartberg. Similarly, if I go to Scorpion, again, it's independent business unit who carries own mining plan. And again, there is a very detailed mining plan behind it, that what is the mining and stripping. So the number is forecasted based on a very detailed plan. And as a business, we even focus on the 3 years forecast. So even if you go to the next year forecast, it's a month to month, it's very clear. Even and the remaining 2 years will be quarter to quarter. So we definitely, any number we forecast is based on a full mining plan and full production plan.
Absolutely. I think exactly to that point. Done a lot of work, and maybe Andre can comment as well. We've done a lot of work to make sure that our mining plan compliance is as high as possible. And that's really where, and even Sean maybe is a better person to speak to that. And then when we get it wrong, we have sufficient flexibility in the plan to go after another area so that we are not then disadvantaged by not having a stope to mine or not having an open pit area to mine. I think that's where the focus has gone, because we went here 2-3 years ago, Andre, in terms of mining plan compliance.
That's it. So we have that detailed mining plan, and I mean, you know, we try and put a lot of effort into our budgeting plans, which is, you know, build up from first principle, looking back, obviously, what we know from track record and building it forward. So, and then in there, we build efficiency. I take Black Mountain, for instance, a classic one for us has been changing the mining method. So we've been driving long haul mining, which is more productive, safer, lending itself to more automation. So, you know, we've gone from where, let's say, 10% or so was coming from long haul mining to where we're sitting now, maybe 35, and we're growing every year. So it's obviously building those factors in with the mine, with the plans, to be able to say, right, this is obviously from the mine plan which will come out, and this is obviously the cost where we
I think also very typical. I mean, came from an Anglo-American, and did it very well. And we spent a lot of time refining what we call the planning cycle in the last couple of years, where, you know, every year we re-review our long-term plan, so the rest of life of mine, And then we started doing more detailed budgeting and planning on a 3-year. Like exactly as you said, I mean, these are not easy assets to forecast because of the ramp down. So I think that is actually really helped us. But on Homsburg, I mean, Satish and the team shouldn't give us anyone, not Satish, who leaves this, whoever comes into Satish's place after hands over, shouldn't give us any surprises because this has been very well thought through. And I'm sure Satish explained to you, one of the reasons why it looks like we're mining here and mining there is that we actually went for accelerated ore tons,
yes,
and really chased stripping
economics
ratio.
Yeah,
so chased, exactly. You know, I suppose if we had just done North Pit alone, Satish, and went after that, what would have been our pre-stripping volume?
120 million tons.
So 120 million tons then became 78 million tons in what we just did.
And time. 1 year before.
But just quickly back on Swartberg. So what we've, the same learnings is what we're doing, learning here, we excavate from the actual deep mine, which used to be a cut and fill mining method. We're retrofitting the longhole mining method there. But Swartberg, we set it up as well from the start to be longhole. So in terms of the predictability of how you can get your ore, a lot more surety regarding Swartberg in terms of volume. And if you look over the last years, you can clearly see the volume from a Swartberg perspective, we're hitting the target here and there. So what we're doing at Deeps is actually just retrofitting one mining method to another. So that's what we're making sure we get our volumes on that side.
Okay.
Yeah, the video will be for you.
The video. Thank you so much. But as I've said, please do, Shneya, continue to keep the conversation going and ask us questions. You can see the zinc price is doing well. Satish offers us quality streams.
Crayfish. We're having lunch here.
Produce as well. Having price alone doesn't help. It produce.
Thank you.